Andy, welcome back to the podcast. How's it going?
It's going pretty well. It's great to chat. Great to kind of take a little bit of a break from the day. It's been, I was telling you before, growth is great. But along with that, on a small team, it means like support has been out of control. So I've been kind of moving slow on a lot of projects I'd like to move on. But right now it's a nice time to just kind of check out for a little bit and just kind of focus high level and chat with you. So I'm definitely excited to dig into things today.
Yeah, for sure. For sure. These are some of my favorite times of the week because same. It's kind of later in my day, but I definitely have a couple more hours to put in, but this is a nice break to kind of, I kind of reflect a lot during our conversations as we're talking of like, oh yeah, that actually is a thing or a problem or something I enjoy or don't. And I actually, and as a follow-up to our chat last week about all the calls I've been on, kind of came out in our marketing meeting this week that we're going to have fixed kind of office hours every week. And so we're just going to block off an hour on Tuesday and an hour on Friday. I'll handle one, our director of podcaster success will handle the other, and it's just going to be an open invitation. So for all the people that thought I was crazy for giving out my Calendly link, so we're basically going to have an hour twice a week. Anybody can come and ask any question they want. And so we're going to see how that goes. So I just wanted to share that with folks that thought I'd fallen off the loony wagon.
I'm excited to hear how it goes. We'll save that for a follow-up after you've done it kind of for a few weeks, but I'm definitely excited to hear how that goes.
Yeah, for sure. It's cool to hear that growth is going really well, and it's something that I want to dig into because I hear, and I think your business is a little more cyclical and has like a seasonal nature, different than ours. Ours definitely has a seasonal and cyclical nature, and that season is coming up around the end of the year. People either say, oh shit, I wanted to start a podcast this year and I haven't, and now it's December, I got to get on the horse, or in the new year, I'm going to start a podcast this year because everyone else and their mother has one. Mm-hmm. But you know, I think, well, one, I want to kind of talk marketing and what you all are doing and how you think about marketing, but also I want to talk maybe first about like growth mindset. Because I think that's like a big part of what this show is about. It's like, okay, we both have businesses that are like paying our bills and we have a small team. From there to, you know, mid 7-8 figures, like what does that look like? And that's all growth, I think. And that means a lot of different things. But like when somebody says, oh, you own your own SaaS business and you are a growing company, like how does that make you feel? Like, do you feel content and proud, or do you feel like a little bit of imposter syndrome when you talk about growth?
Definitely. I mean, it's a mixture. I don't think the imposter syndrome for me is ever going to go away. But in a lot of it too is like the metrics do look great, but it's just like the inside of it. It just seems like there's always fires. It's so crazy, and even while we are getting things to a saner place, there's just like really just so many things that break, and it's just like my job to solve problems, and like there's just always going to be problems, so that just makes it kind of hard to not kind of have some imposter syndrome. But yeah, it's at the end of the day, when it comes to growth, I just ultimately try to not complicate it. It was kind of when I first started getting into marketing and into the startup world, and eventually launched my first podcast, which was the early stage founder. A lot of what I did was just talk to other founders about growth, about tactics, and about all the things they were trying. And I feel like that's what a lot of the content in the space is about, like dozens of different hacks and different things to do and channels and whatever. And it's just like, at the end of the day, I mean, you don't need to do that much right to win, to build a really big business. You don't have to get a half dozen channels humming along. If you get, especially at our stage, like one channel, especially if it's something like paid ads or even SEO as well, like if you can nail that, that can definitely get you to well into the eight figures. And I just kind of keep telling myself that and just have to like shut out a lot of the marketing content out there so that I don't like succumb to shiny object syndrome, and I can just kind of focus on a small number of things, knowing that if I keep executing on these, it's going to get where we want to go. And maybe at some point, if and when I sense a plateau and don't see a way to keep doubling down on what we're already doing, then we'll look into kind of that other channel. But like, we're just not even close to that point now. So it's just like focusing on a very small number of things. And for us, that's really one on the product, is just relentlessly focusing on the user experience, and just making it as easy as possible to use while still being powerful, creating content around the product, how to get the most out of it, and SEO. That's really where we've been getting a ton of our growth. It's just, there's still so much more for us to do this. I'm just trying not to even think too much beyond that.
Yeah. And I think that I try very hard to, keep my head down and actually I don't like listen to a lot of podcasts about marketing or growth. And I don't read a lot of blog posts. There's a couple of blogs I follow pretty closely and that's it. But they're all really fundamental ones, you know, like fundamental SEO, fundamental content marketing things, which is where we're spending most of our marketing muscle these days. But I think that I get hung up. I hate to say it because it sounds so petty, but I get kind of hung up comparing myself and our business to others in our space and that are our peers. And it's not hard, I think, because you look at like, you know, ConvertKit, and they show their revenue and it's, you know, 5 million a month or whatever it is. And you're just like, I might never get there. And that's sad. And I don't know that like I have a lot to be sad about, but I compare myself to that and say, shit, like we are very successful by a lot of metrics and we are a long way from that. And sometimes I just say like, we're underperforming, right? If you want to take like the stock analogy, it's like, I feel sometimes like we're underperforming our potential. And that kind of bums me out, even though abstractly or objectively we're doing great and we're growing every month. But you know, in some way I feel like it's just not enough. I don't know. Is that just me, or do you ever get that?
No, that's like a never enough attitude is kind of what drives me a lot. It's not always like a healthy drive by any means, but that's kind of the thing where it's like I always have a sense of urgency, where it's like it's never, like we've talked about it, like the features are never coming quick enough. There always needs to be more, and that's definitely, I don't know if it's a chip on my shoulder or what it is, but like that's kind of part of me, where even when, in our space directly, like there are definitely bigger players, significantly bigger players, people that we want to overtake, things we want to do. And it's just, for me, it's just across the board, whether it's marketing, whether it's product, whatever it is, it's just, I just always feel like there's so much more we should be doing, we need to be doing. And that's just kind of, I don't think it's going away. I really don't, at least for me. Do you feel like I've kind of accepted it? Like I don't love it, but like, again, like that I think has helped fuel a lot of our growth is that kind of attitude. So even though I'm sure health, like for stress and other reasons, like it's not great, but at the end of the day, right now, what I'm trying to do, I think without having that urgency, and without kind of having that chip on my shoulder, it'd be really hard to keep pushing just through all the shit that comes up in running a business. Like that's what almost surprises me more, is how you can be kind of more laid back, especially in the beginning, and just keep putting up with basically just getting punched in the face every day. I don't know how, if you're not trying to prove something even just to yourself, you would get through all that.
Yeah, I mean, those beginning days are so tough because you're putting in so much effort for almost no return, right? Like, especially, I mean, we built this product from scratch, months of just gone. Money out the door and time, all the time just gone. And now I feel like we have like a little bit bigger lever to where, like, if we decide we're going to start on this campaign and we're going to write a bunch of content around this thing, in a couple months we see a pretty big result. And so that gives me some solace, I guess, in that, like, okay, at this point, when we decide to do something, one, we kind of have done enough to where we know that, like, it probably will work or it won't. But those experiments and those bets we're taking kind of pay off more. I mean, the beginning is so hard. Like, I will never, ever do it again from scratch. It's just like, oh my God, never. Just the resources, you know,
yeah.
Time or money or people or whatever.
And so, I mean, how does this influence your thoughts about growth? Because I get, like, for me, it's kind of thinking about, okay, here's where I want to go. We're not going quick enough. What do we need to do? And like we can have the kind of mental well-being conversation about reading into that and whether that's healthy or not. But like at the end of the day, like, how are you trying to harness that, or how is that impacting just your approach to growth? Or is it just kind of making you feel shitty about the growth and not really impacting it outside of that?
Yeah, it's interesting. You know, I never thought this would be the case, but my measure of success just very recently is, so we definitely have a goal, right? We have a goal, 5 million in revenue, 1 million in profit annually, right?
Mm-hmm.
And so like when we get there, things will be great. And I think the time between now and then, whatever, a few years, a lot is really good too. But that's the big goal that we're going for in the next few years. And the milestones between now and then, very surprisingly for me, is hiring. Because I think every time we're able to hire somebody, that lever gets bigger. You know, we're able to ship features faster. We're able to hire another marketing person. We're able to hire another support person to retain and convert more customers. To where, like, that for me, that's the increased leverage in the business, is when the business is profitable enough to support another person, then my job in a way maybe gets easier or changes at least. And that's a whole nother conversation. But if we're smart about those people, then everybody we hire adds to growth. And to me, that mm-hmm. that's kind of that's the intermediate kind of milestones that I'm looking at these days. I don't know. How about you? Like, how do you, like, what's the framework for you?
Yeah, I mean, when I'm thinking about it, it's, I don't really have that as defined of a goal. That's where it's like a weird, and maybe this is how every founder feels when they're not pitching a VC or whatever, but like, I have no idea what the size of our market is. I don't know like how big we could get without changing kind of the business model, like going after more of a data play and going after enterprises or whatever it is. Like, I have no idea how big we could get doing what we're doing right now. And so I'm just kind of putting the pedal to the floor without really trying to think long of that. It's like, this is working now. I know what we're trying to build in terms of the product with our current focus. Let's get there and market this. And kind of, if things start slowing down or when they start slowing down, we can kind of pick our head up and look around a bit and see what's next. And like, I obviously have like some ideas in the back of my mind, but it's just, again, just like trying not to get distracted by it. And so it's just trying to think about, like, all right, what do we need to do to get there as quickly as we can? Because I guess this is where it's weird for, like, again, not turning this in like a therapy session, but it's like, when my background playing poker professionally, there have been significant things that shaped that market. I've had sites that I played on get shut down, go out of business, whatever it is, take my money from that. I've had the government come in and effectively shut down the online poker industry. And there have just been, I just always feel like it's going to end. And I never felt like I capitalized on it at the time as much as I should have. And so that's just kind of always in the back of my mind is like, is daily fantasy sports, is that just a trend? Like, is this always, is this going to, how long will this last? And so like, that is where a lot of my urgency also comes from, is like, I don't know how long this is going to last. I need to get everything I can out of it while I can, and grow as quickly as we can, just in case it goes away. And I'm kind of accepting at this point that like, it's not going to truly go away. But I don't know how long it'll be as good as it is for. And so that's kind of like the driving force. And then, yeah, then it comes down to hiring and everything else around it, like you're talking about, is just figuring out, do we need more people? Will that actually help? What would these people do? Do we have the cash for that? Do we want to add cash to hire faster? How do we want to handle that? And yeah, it's not like an easy equation. As you can tell, me just kind of like brain dumping right now at what's in my head about it. It's just like, there's just so many moving pieces, so many motivations, so many different things kind of shaping the equation. But that's just kind of how I feel about it.
Yeah. Ironically, I felt very similarly about podcasting, that, you know, a lot of people said, oh, we're at peak podcasting, or we're past peak podcasting and it's all a fad. Now I don't see it like that at all. I feel it's more cemented, like blogging is in kind of the mainstream. Yeah. In a lot of ways of content, you know? And so like, I think instead of, or so that we don't give away kind of our secret sauce, let's take content marketing as an area of marketing and maybe talk about how we think about content marketing. Cause I know we both do a lot of other things, but just to abstract it a little bit, I'd love to kind of hear, from you, and then I'll kind of share how we think about content marketing for the business. But like, how do you think about it? How do you decide what to write? How do you write? How do you, you know, leverage other people's time? Like, what does that whole process look like for y'all?
Yeah, this content marketing is basically like how I got into marketing, was in working with startups to begin with. And that was a lot of my role at Groove and at Hubstaff. I honestly feel like it gets so misapplied, just across the board. I think people view it as this wheel, that this hamster wheel that they have to stay on, is keep churning out content after content without really like stopping to say, why am I on this wheel? Like, what am I actually trying to do? And so for us at SaberSim, like almost out of necessity, is we don't have a big team. And like, we need to put all of our money into hiring more developers. We couldn't be hiring writers. We couldn't. And like, I hate shitty content. And I probably have like a somewhat like arrogant view on what shitty content is, where I just feel like the vast majority of content out there isn't great. I think if you are writing content, if you're appealing, especially in the B2B market, you're writing to people who run these businesses, and it's usually written by someone who has never even worked in one of the businesses that they're supposedly like saying how to do X, how to do Y. Like, if you need to have a true expertise, I think, for content to work. And that's kind of like from ground one, like that's really, I think, like table stakes. That's not to say you can't get traffic without it, but I just think for it to really stand out for your brand, you need to have a true expert producing this content in some way. That doesn't mean they can't work with a writer or whatever else, but like, you just need to have a real expert in there. And so we looked around in the market to see what our competitors were doing. And there's like dozens of podcasts in the daily fantasy sports space, a ton of YouTube channels. There's people putting out blogs, literally every form of content you can think of. All our competitors are churning it out every single day. And like, I don't want to play that game. One, because it doesn't really monetize. But two, like, it takes a shit ton of effort to do that. And that's basically multiple people full time. That's all they're doing. And I don't see how you get the ROI from that. So what we kind of did, just out of necessity, but also somewhat strategically, is just say, like, all right, they're publishing all this content for free. If people want this kind of stuff, they can get it. But what can't they get? And it's really the deeper strategy of just, what are the ways, in our case, it's like, what are the fundamentals of daily fantasy football? What should you be thinking when you're building lineups? What matters regardless of what week it is? What applies season in, season out? What's kind of like the evergreen content for our space? And we've just created a lot of content specifically around a small number of topics. We'll update them every season, but we're not like trying to churn it all out. And this lets us stand out in the market because other people aren't doing this. It lets us put more effort into making sure the content really is great. And it ties directly into our product because we can say, here's all these concepts and here's how our tool makes it easy for you to apply them. And I think a lot of times with content marketing, people aren't tying it back to the product enough. They know who their audience is and they write to that audience, but there's kind of like a gap between like, okay, someone who is your target customer might be interested in this topic, but how is that topic going to get them interested in your product? And you don't want it to just be like osmosis that gets them from the content in your product. You have to be kind of more deliberate about that. And so that's really what we've tried to focus on. And I think we've gotten great results from it on that standpoint. But that's kind of our approach. I'm curious to hear how you feel about it. I'm not sure if you're as opinionated as me on this, but hopefully that at least gave some color to my thoughts.
Yeah. No, I love it. And just a question. Do you do any keyword research or like kind of SEO analysis before you decide to write something? Or is it you as the expert say, we need an article about this. Fuck it. I'm going to do it no matter what the volume looks like.
Yeah, we hadn't done any keyword research at all until basically March. Okay. All of our, in our content, until recent, no, even now, our content does not generate a huge amount of traffic. Our content, mm-hmm. right, and I should have gotten into this more, our content is more of a conversion asset, yep. where we're, fortunate is not the right word, we've worked very hard to build up through word of mouth and other strategies like that. We get a large number of trials coming in every month. We have a large email list and we have like a decent following on YouTube, nothing crazy, but like we have some kind of organic channels there. And so I, from day one, have said like, all right, we have a big enough audience compared to our revenue that we should not be trying to build the audience. It will happen naturally, but like, that's not my goal. My goal is to convert more of our audience. And so we were trying to kind of take a step back and saying, okay, what do people need to know? Where if they believe these things, then our software is kind of a no-brainer. What tools can we, what kind of resources can we give them to help them get the most out of our tools so that they stick around and don't churn out? And keyword research really hasn't played much of a role at all. Recently, we've kind of restructured the website to do better for kind of product keywords and more like kind of the money terms that aren't well suited for content directly. And that's been a huge help on SEO, but our real content, we're just thinking about what do our prospects need and what will keep our customers around longer.
Yeah, no, it's funny when you were describing kind of the product focused content approach, I immediately think of Ahrefs. And so listeners will know that I'm a huge fanboy of Ahrefs and their content in particular. And they do such a good job of this. And I love it. And we do a little bit of this. We do a lot of keyword research. But I think when we look at how effective some of it is, we definitely have had times where in a month our traffic goes up a lot and our number of new trials does not change that much. And to me, that's like we're writing. And I think it means that we're writing content that is too high up in the funnel and that doesn't have any buyer intent. And I think there's definitely a place for that and a point for that in content marketing. And I think that like this idea of every piece of content should have a purpose is very true. And I don't know how to put that into a plan or a strategy or a, like a formula that we can follow on a regular basis, but I see that, like, okay, some pieces of content should be shareworthy as like their primary objective, and some should be out there just to get links, and some should be super bottom of the funnel conversion focused. And I don't think that we think through that as much as I would like us to, because there's definitely something to like writing an article just to get eyeballs, and that like has some real use, because it helps all of your other stuff, I think. But yeah, mm-hmm. we definitely see these product focused or like feature focused pieces convert the vast majority of our blog content. But we do a lot of keyword research, both for like articles that are not difficult, or like topics that are not difficult to rank for, that are interesting for our readers and people that are looking to get into podcasting. But also to try and find those kind of angles of like, wow, I hadn't thought of someone searching for this. If we had a piece on this, it would help them kind of get into our world somehow.
Do you do any retargeting, or like, do you have lead magnets, or like when someone lands on kind of one of the more top of funnel articles, like are there other stages of the funnel to kind of get them to the conversion, or how does that work for you guys?
Yeah, so we have played around with this a lot. And I think when we talk about those levers, you know, like if you have a site that's getting, you know, 100,000 uniques a month, that like changing something in that respect can do a lot. And so we've played around with this a lot. We've done various versions of like a how to start a podcast email course, or how to grow a podcast, and kind of splitting the traffic into two groups there. Potentially we use Right Message on the site to help kind of stratify visitors, based on kind of how they answer some of those questions. And we give them different, opt-in prompts based on that. And yeah, email converts very well for us. So yeah, I think that the purpose of some of those really high in the funnel articles is just to get people there and convert and get their email address and then convert them on email later. And in particular, and I think for you too, I can imagine there's just a lot of understanding that goes along with our product that people need to get, like what a podcast is and how to do it, before they'll get any value from our tool. And it sounds like for you too. So like, you know, Denise and I talk that like, we can never get to people soon enough when it comes to education, that like, if we could just sit down and talk to everyone for an hour, we would be super successful. And of course it doesn't scale, right? But like that would be optimal. And so I think that like a lot of what we try to do is just really educational so that they can be successful and hopefully choose our tool.
Mm.
But that's a part of what we do, I guess.
Because like thinking about your business, what seems challenging to me, because like when I think about Daily Fantasy Sports, it's like, okay, what you're trying to do is figure out, what do people want? Like, why do they want to play Daily Fantasy Sports? It's like, okay, they want to win money. They like the competition. Like it's like a very small number of things. Like ultimately they want to win. So you help show them strategy and like really go deep. We have professionals on our team. Our partners are all professionals. Like we're very deep on this. So we can just like break down, here are our strategies. Here's how you can apply them. And this and that ties into the product. And then you think about their objections. And it's usually like, it's too complicated, takes too much time, and this and that. So we've really positioned our product as being easy to use, as kind of automating away a lot of busy work, so that if they have a limited amount of time, they can build winning lineups using our tool, and we show them how to do all that. So like, it's a very concise thing. And I feel like on podcasting, like, this is speaking as someone who's like launched several podcasts, has two now, like there are just so many different motivations that I wouldn't even know where to begin. Like, and I was like going through your site, like you have the different segmentation and like all these different routes, but like, I think that's gotta be challenging, right? Of figuring out like, why are they starting this podcast? And then based on that, I just feel like it branches out in so many different directions. That's really hard to speak to. Is that accurate, or how do you feel about it?
Yeah, I think it's both. Yeah. I mean, it's definitely, we think about that. We have personas, we have like five different personas of people that come to the site and want to start a podcast. And we talk to each of those very differently. And I think that's how you should do it. Kind of like I'm sure you do, is you have people that come in and want something that's simple, or they want to make more money, or they, you know, And at the same time, there are universal truths to all of them, you know, like someone has to understand what the hell an RSS feed is, you know, no matter why they're starting a podcast. So some of it is just across the board, and some of it is super specific. And yeah, and I think that like some of the stuff we write really alienates some of our audience, and I don't think there's a way around that. You know, like we write stuff on monetizing and growing your show. A lot of people don't care. You know, a lot of like, especially businesses run their podcasts like as a networking opportunity more than, you know, I want to have 10,000 listeners an episode. And like for them, like ads are never going to come into play, but like we have to write that because there's definitely a subset of the audience that wants that. So yeah, I don't know. We kind of say it's never going to be for everybody all the time, you know?
Do you notice the different segments must convert at wildly different rates and like have wildly different lifetime values just through churn and their average revenue and all of that, right?
Yeah, I have no idea. Yeah.
Okay.
Because we don't tie like write message or drip data into lifetime value. Yeah, or conversion rates. You're making me feel bad. I know we should, but
no. We don't have analytics other than like what's in ProfitWell. Again, like I just set up Google Analytics like last week, and like it probably isn't even set up right. But what I like, you must like think about it though in some way of like which segment has the most value, because, or like which segment is the easiest to sell, or like which, like, because they're not going to act as one group. And like this is a huge struggle that we have, and it's kind of going off the content marketing, but it all really ties back. It's just like we have people who are new to DFS to begin with, daily fantasy sports. They're just getting started, don't even know the basics. We have people who have played around with it before, they've tried some other tools, but like they're not doing great, but they're like at least are familiar with things. And then we have those who are consistently making money, whether they're pros or not, but they're using other software tools, they're paying for other sites, and like they're all worth dramatically different amounts. They're all, I don't know the exact numbers by any means, but like they all need different things. And it's just my struggle is like figuring out, can we go after all of them? Should we? And then like the bigger question is like, should we? And I don't really have a great answer to it, but I'm wondering, like, have you guys thought about just like, is there one of these segments that like is just the right fit for us to focus on, not forever, but like for now? Or just is it something where you feel like you're able to kind of speak to all of them without hurting things?
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, I think the now thing is the key for us, at least, like where, again, like we've come to peace with our limitations. And I think everyone has that, right? Intercom wants to go hire 100 more marketers and 500 more developers. They're resource limited to the same percentage as we are, you know, to the same extent that we are. The scale is just different. But I think that the way we look at it is, and it sounds like you're doing the same thing, is like we want to write really top of funnel, really just general podcasting knowledge content to have like brand awareness and to get people into our world early, because they may be those like $100 or $1,000 a month customers later, but they're just not ready yet. And then we want to maybe spend a little more energy, you know, and that's a lot of things, further down in the funnel, focusing on just people who are ready to start. And then from there, even maybe there's a little bit of different focus on like higher value customers versus lower value. And that's like, that's not just how much they pay per month to begin with. It's how long do they stick around? Because I think we both have aspirational products. And so that makes it more different, right? Than like true B2B, like selling Help Scout or Groove, you know, like that, the demand for those is pretty inelastic. So I guess we think about it as like, our focus on these different cohorts is really a function of time, not a function of focus. You know, like we want to get everyone eventually, but know that those super top of funnel pieces just take a long time. We want to try to touch them and let them know about us early. I don't know. Is that, you know, after saying that, is that Does that like ring true to you?
It's so for us, like, it really hasn't been, I just haven't thought as much about the actual funnel because we've had enough trials kind of naturally come in that like I'm able to focus more on kind of the bottom part of the funnel and just like say like it, but it's also weird like just a niche where I there's not going to be a ton of searches around like these different terms, like there's not really as much value. I don't think I could cast as wide of a net just going super broad on like articles and things like that. I think we can like write somewhat clickbaity like YouTube titles that like probably are getting some like decent organic search there on like how to beat daily fantasy football in 2020, like that kind of stuff. But like outside of that, it's just like, all right, like these trials are coming in. How do I support that and just kind of focus there? And so, yeah, there just hasn't been as much thought about the very top of funnel. Also just because like those are the questions that I get on support that I just know this person is never going to be a customer. And if they are, like, I want to just refund their money because like they're going to be the most annoying customer ever where they're just like, how do I win? Like, what button do I click to win? And it's just like, no, like that's not how this works. Like,
that's like, not what we do here.
Yeah. And so like there are definitely times when like you can see things that lead to more of those people coming in. And I just worry that like the higher up the funnel I go, the more of that I'm going to get. And it doesn't actually it won't move the needle at all. It'll probably just distract us. So like, that's just kind of where I've struggled is that like our product is intentionally easy to use, relatively. Like, I mean, you still have to kind of understand what you're doing, but we have had a strong focus on UX. And we do automate a lot of things that it's basically it's like using Excel versus like using a purpose-built program. The other tools, you have to program them to get them to do what you want, whereas we are kind of built from the ground up for what we're trying to do. And so, but that also naturally, so it appeals to the more casual players, which is great because the market is much bigger, but like a ton of those people are just like horrible customers and it's no fault of their own. They're just not, this isn't what they need. And like, that's been my biggest struggle is just like figuring out how to kind of tiptoe across that line and not fall over to one side where it's like, I want the mass market to some extent, but I don't want just all the shit that comes along with it. And it's hard to do with content, with whatever kind of marketing you're doing. But that's kind of where we fall right now.
Yeah. No, that's super interesting. Cause I'd never considered not writing top of funnel content as, just by kind of default, not getting those beginner type customers in. And that's really smart. Yeah. Because we definitely have those, and some things that we're doing are going to bring more of them in. And so I hadn't really thought of that. And I think that's a product thing too, like you're talking about. Like, that's a product and a marketing decision, is when you do certain things, the types of people that it will attract from a quality perspective will change. Interesting.
And this really drove, it was driven home to me working at Groove specifically, because like Groove makes help desk software. They make it the shared inbox, and the if you want to go top of funnel, what you do is you go after people who are running their business through Gmail, they are email, whatever they're using, but like they're not using a tool. They just have their support agents in an inbox, and like you'll get double replies, you'll get all these things where like they're using a tool that wasn't built for having multiple people working in it, for having easy kind of search and all these other things. But there's like, you don't want to have to convince that person that they have a problem. Like, you don't want to have to make them realize like, hey, email really sucks for this if you're not using some tool on top of it. Yep. Because like, the more convincing you have to do, just the harder your job is, the more content you have to create, the more nurturing you have to do, the longer your funnel has to be. And like, people are going to fall out along the way. Producing all those assets just takes a ton of time. And like, I'd rather go after the people who already know they have a problem and are trying to and pretty much know what the solution is and are looking at it from there. And that's easier said than done, of course, but like, it's just like, even at Groove was probably over 20 people, smallish marketing team, but I think we're probably like four when I was there. It's like not tiny, at least in our scale, but like we just couldn't do everything. And I just feel like the higher up the funnel you go, the more work you're just creating for yourself. And I'm just like, that kind of scarred me of just like, rather than create out these super long funnels, let's just go after kind of the lower stages if we can. And in Groove's case, like the help desk market is wildly competitive, so it's easier said than done to go after that bottom end of the funnel. But for a lot of us, I'm assuming, are in more of a niche market, or maybe less competitive with I know podcasting is wildly competitive as well, but like you don't have billion-dollar companies spending hundreds of dollars a click on help desk software or podcast hosting. But like, I just think just from a conservation of resources and focus standpoint, getting as low on the funnel as like you realistically can just has a ton of benefits.
Mm-hmm. Have you heard the name Eugene Schwartz as it relates to this like problem and solution aware stuff?
Is he like a copywriter or marketer? I'm not sure. Like what?
Yeah. I mean, what you described is like a couple of the stages of like customer awareness. So it's like they're problem aware, they're solution aware, they're brand aware. I forget. We'll link up an article in the show notes. But yeah, this is interesting stuff and is like really kind of marketing 201 stuff that maybe we'll dig into again on another episode of like kind of how and why you want to write stuff at each of these phases. Because it's definitely like being really purposeful about your content, which I think is the way you got to be as a small team, especially. Yeah.
Yeah. And I think that's where it just is always important to kind of not question the standard advice, but just think about it in terms of return, in terms of what you're actually able to handle, and just realize and accept like you're not gonna be able to do everything. So pick kind of those highest leverage things that you can focus on. And just try not to let that imposter syndrome, that envy just eat away at you because you see all the thousand things you're not doing. And that again is much easier said than done. But I think it's kind of that focus that really makes a difference when it comes to content marketing and just growth in general.
Cool. So for folks out there, I would love to hear your thoughts on marketing, growth, customer awareness. Shoot us a message, podcast@seekingscale.com. Andy and I'll get back to you there. If you aren't already, please go and subscribe, seekingscale.com, and subscribe on your favorite podcasting app. Andy, always a lot of fun. Thanks for chatting, and we'll be back next week.
Yeah, this was great, Craig. I'll talk to you next week.